The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello friends, I'm your host Chris Thrall. I'm a former Royal Marines Commando. I've adventured, for better and sometimes worse, across 80 countries on all 7 continents. Welcome to the Bought the T-Shirt podcast. Hello friends, it's a very special day for me because I get to have my lovely friend Billy Watson on the podcast. Billy is a stand-up comedian, which I just think is one of the bravest things on the planet you can do. Mate, it's great to have you on the show.
Thanks very much for having me. Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here.
Yes, and it's reciprocal, isn't it? Because you kindly had me on Billy Watson TV. And I saw what you did there with the Watts on.
Not many people get that, but yeah.
Yes, how's beautiful, beautiful Scotland?
It's, as usual, kind of grey and cold, but that's, we're used to it. Maybe in June we'll get a sunny day.
Yes. So how did you get into comedy?
How did I get into comedy? Well, back in the day, I was trying to get a rock band going with my mate. We had a big fallout, so then I tried to get other people drafted in. One of those people was this girl, she was quite a good songwriter, but she handed me a video of David Icke turning off the tide, which is about an hour and a half long. I can remember actually just taking it out, the video player, after watching it and putting the news on, and just realising how much the news were lying to us, because we never heard of things like the Bilderberg Group and Council on Foreign Relations, which were obviously real things that I gathered from watching the video, and never heard them in the news. So it's like somebody's not telling the full story here. David Icke was in Edinburgh a couple of weeks later, so I went with the girl and her sister to watch him, literally 5 or 6 people in the audience. And then I was working night shifts, so I continued my... I was talking to somebody the other day, instead of going down the rabbit holes, you should go up the rabbit holes, because it's like increasing your knowledge and consciousness. But anyway, since then, basically, David Icke, not long after that, he started talking about Bill Hicks, maybe even during that video itself. The first one I watched, but that made me aware of him.
Don't worry, don't be afraid, ever, because this is just a ride.
Then I watched Bill Hicks, and I'm like, I can talk about all this stuff in comedy. So I kind of put the music basically in the back burner. I wish I'd kept the lessons going, but anyway, I started doing comedy then and invented some different characters. The first one was called The Great White Shaft, and it was basically... After trying to improvise, and I've done quite well improvising, but they were saying, oh, you need a type 5, you need a script. So I wrote this comedy script, and it was all about waking up and trying to talk to your friends, trying to talk to your mother and family, and them not listening. And then I wanted a revolution, so it was like if everyone didn't pay their TV licence, they would give you free TV licence and stuff like that, and out of that would come a revolution. I tried that in the clubs for a while, but I found what you fight, you become. So I was like a fascist dictator myself. I didn't care if folk laughed. I just wanted them to join my revolution. And if they didn't, I wanted to take them outside for a fight, which isn't very good if you've seen my arms, you know. So I was going to lose that in. But then basically I started doing comedy and other things after that, more like Billy Connolly storytelling. And I was writing a lot of poetry, lyrics originally when I was trying to get the band going. So I kept writing lyrics and, all about trying to wake people up. And even I was doing the funny comedy, I was trying to get raw to get general public interested. So then if they went to my website, they would see this other stuff I've done and talk about video blogs and, you know, talking about all this stuff. Because I think when you get to a certain level of awareness of this stuff, it's kind of a responsibility to try and tell other people about it. Otherwise, what's the point in just keeping it in your own head? So it's almost a matter of duty that I keep plodding on with this stuff, you know?
When there's people out there that are receptive to learning, they need to hear it. And you mentioned Bill Hicks and the wonderful David Icke, right? David's very kindly been on the show. So's his son, Gareth. And it's when they say, right, we are all one consciousness experiencing, you know,
self-subjectively.
Yes, exactly. That was one of the most powerful things I ever heard from two people you could tell were they genuinely cared for humanity in almost like a Jesus, you know, Yeshua like way. That helped form the foundation of my spiritual awakening, which has now led me to a place that's just incredible, Billy. You know, it's just the most, I just didn't think life could be this good.
I never sent my son to school as soon as I started wanting the children to wear any mask. And I was sending letters, emails to the school every time they were sending notices out. I was replying with lots of information about why they're talking nonsense. And find it here. And I kept doing it and telling them we're talking nonsense. And eventually they threatened me and said, we're going to get the school police officer onto you if you don't stop sending his emails.
You just got to read 1984 to know what's going on. What was it like the first time you got on stage?
The first time was one of the... I thought it went all right. It was a five-minute gig at the Stand Comedy Club. They had a night called Red Raw. So I didn't realise actually how scripted most comedians' sets are. I thought they just got on stage and went for it. So that's basically what I'd done. I've just kind of never really had any ideas of topics or anything. I just think got on, blabbed for... I can remember talking about the Mayan calendar in 2012 was coming and it was going to be the end of the world or something like that at some point. But when I got off, I had a couple of girls at the bar tell me they liked it. So I thought it was great. But then I got the sound guy in the booth. He was telling me I might have wanted to have written some jokes in there. I was like, oh, jokes. All right, you need to do that, do you? So anyway, I done it again at that place and I was a bit more timid the second time because the first time I was a bit brash and just going for it. And then I said this anyway, it went not too bad the second time. I got it right up in the paper where basically I said, this is my second gig and hopefully the next one will go better. But then I done a comedy course at the Stand and I never paid much attention to what they were trying to teach me. And then on the night of the big showcase, I had a couple of drinks and I tried to rant about politics and it was the most disastrous experience ever. It just went so horrifically, horrifically bad that the guy from the Stand basically says, go away for a while and sort out your shit. So I actually wrote a poem about that and I talk about that. I made a joke out of it, you know. But basically, that was the first experience of, oh my God, this is bad.
Hey, but two things there. A, what brilliant material to go back and go over. Look, my first gig or my second gig, I crashed and burned, right? I'm going to tell you what it's, right? That, and then also the fact that what a lesson for everyone watching, you got back up and made a success of it.
Well, I don't know if I made a success of it because to be honest, I've been an outcast and a black sheep for quite a number of years and I've been doing my own thing, doing my own shows at the Edinburgh Festival and I've never really been part of the comedy world. I'm barred and ostracised from, well, literally every club in Scotland. My name isn't good because of various things over the years where I've stood up to certain people, made my opinion known in certain things, and now I'm just, nobody touches me with a barge pole. I also done a comedy character called Nob Stewart, and that was intentionally way out there, you know. It was a way that, because my material is actually quite strong, and the poetry sometimes, I write poems and I wrote them for a character first initially called Hamish McScotty. I had a green tartan suit my dad gave me with big flares, put a green Jimmy hat on, and then wrote this poems of this character, my life stories, but exaggerated. So when I do them as myself, people think, oh my God, this guy's mental. So I've done that behind a character for a while, Nob Stewart, just to try and, yeah, because it's hard when you're so raw and real. People can't really handle that. So I was using the character just to be myself almost, if you know what I mean, and just exaggerated version.
Hey, can I say something though? Doug Stanhope, I know he's one of your favourite comedians, definitely one of mine, just absolute, absolute legend. He won't play mainstream gigs.
Well, I've realised this.
You know,
I've realised it wasn't made for me, that whole scene now. And now getting involved in that Comcast, that was the first opportunity I had where I had a crowd of people that could understand the material I wrote 20 years ago almost. That's what I performed that night, in the Friday night. And yeah, it was just so good to like have an audience that kind of appreciates what I'm doing, because it's hard to make all that stuff funny. So a lot of it can be a little bit more like a show or presentation, you know, with funny bits in it, rather than trying to make people laugh, laugh, laugh. That's a different thing. I can do that. I try to do that as well, but I get more enjoyment for trying to make serious stuff, you know, palatable or funny, or, you know, say something while in the joke, not just have jokes, because so many comedians these days, they're talking. It might be amusing, but what are they actually saying? What have these people actually got to say about anything? Absolutely zero. So why are we listening to them?
It's the same with YouTubing, mate, really. There's so many people talking about what's going on, but they do it in a way of spitting bile all the time. Down in the woke, it's transgender, never offers solution. And all it is like fear porn, hitting people's dopamine because people are upset. They've got questions. They know something's like really wrong, quite a lot of people. And it's just taken advantage. And it's why my channel, we just grow steadily, but fairly slowly, is because we tell, you know, I'm not here to scandalize on people and hook them in with their dopamine. I'm here to say, listen, this is what's going on in society, but this is how you get out of it. It's called the spiritual battle. Everything's a combination of energy, frequency, and vibration. So if you want to change your reality, you have to change your thinking, not other people's, although that will come. And it starts with, you know, it starts with you. But of course, that's not very popular. But people want, like, let's rise up against the government and screw these gay people or these transgender people or these. It's just divisive. Just divisive. So, but I think the best comedians just tell stories, don't they? The comedy element is inherent in telling the story.
I've got this book of funny poem stories, and within there you can put a line or two, just one or two, drop a line within a funny story that can be quite powerful. Like, I've got a line of one about my dad. My dad is like a politician. He has no sense of guilt or shame, and just kind of drop that in, you know. It can be effective way just to give that little bit of power to the people kind of thing in your poem, you know.
You came out of a line, it was so funny. You said, I'm not a big fan of the police, but they're a big fan of me.
Because every time I get in my car, they take my picture. But I don't know, I forgot to explain that because I'm driving down the street and it's flash, flash, flash. Hopefully people got that, but I should maybe make it more clear.
No, I got it. I just love the fact that you said they're a big fact. Just that alone conjured up images as they're always giving you a hard time.
Oh, right. Okay. That, right. I never thought of it as that.
Yeah. No, it's and then when you said, you know, they're always taking pictures of me in my car. So let's.
I actually done that skit that I done way back at the start. I can remember one of the gigs I done. There was three guys laughing up the back of the room. Quite a lot, especially that bit where the police come, hello, 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 what's going on here? People not behaving like conditioned robots. And then after that, I talked to them, and they were policemen. They says, oh, we're police, we actually loved what you're saying there, mate. They could see the scenario they're in as well.
That reminded me when I was a doorman in Hong Kong on a few clubs over there, and you're standing up like on the top balcony trying to do your bounce a bit, you know, look, cool and calm and looking around for security and all this sort of stuff. And like, you get people eyeballing you.
All right.
Like, literally, like, there's a bloke there and he's just, you can see, he just can't take his eyes off you. And of course, in our little paranoid, broken minds, I'm there thinking, oh, he wants to go, does he? Oh, yeah. All right, mate. I'm not looking at you, but I'm aware you're looking. Yeah. And then at the end of the night, you stood on the door, you know, saying goodbye to people. And the guy comes up and goes, mate, I just want to say, you look like really professional when you're up there and you're all like handsome and looking after the crowd. Thanks ever so much, mate.
All right. Like,
and then other people come up, shake your hand, and they do the old tuck of 50 quid. In Hong Kong, right. That's 500 bucks. They tuck it in there and you're like, I see.
That's great,
eh? You never
I used
know.
To get women staring at me in clubs. But that was not the reason I wanted them.
It was him, officer. What about hecklers then? How do you deal with them?
Yeah, I've had a few. I don't indulge hecklers very much. You know, to me, a heckle should add to the show. You know, if it's just, I've had one guy at an Edinburgh show, just the drunkest man in the universe. And literally every time I tried to do something, he would blurt out something and spoiling it for everyone, you know, and it was really torturous. And he thought it was all fun and having a good time. It's like, no, mate, you're just a disaster. Mm. And yeah, I had another one around about the time that UKIP was kicking off, and there was a national party or something like that, and there was voting about it. I'd just come back from Turkey after 7 years, and I lived here for 8 months before going back for another four. But during that 8 months, I was saying about, oh, I went to get a job in the local factory. And then at the break time, I went for my break and I thought I'd been teleported to Poland. And basically this guy stood up and says I was being racist because of that. I was just making an observation, you know? And then I said, basically, Lenny Henry, I voted for UKIP, basically just to get rid of Lenny Henry, because that was in the papers at the time. And it's like, not because he's black, just because he's a shit comedian. But by this time, this guy stormed up and left. And like the room had turned on me, so I just went on a 7-minute rant with no laughs at all, just me ranting about fucking everything. That's how I deal with it. Should try and be more funny.
Mate, if they hit you with a racism card, just say, I'm not racist. I hate everybody.
Aye.
Man, it was a different scene, wasn't it, back then? You know, it's very easy to go with the woke crowd and get influenced by all that. When you're not sort of very well, can we say, versed in the world and what's going on in it. And it was like Jim Davison. I mean, growing up, he was like a hero to us all. He was a cool guy. He always had a sexy girl on his arm, always drove a Rolls Royce. It was all, the, you know, ticking all the boxes. Bloody hilarious, and it was of its time. We know that now.
You know, this is a thing that could be the star of this, because a lot of these comedians, obviously, oh, racist, whatever, but maybe they were like a relief valve, because that was the start of immigration and stuff like that. You know, there was lots of people in Britain were dealing with the reality of lots of foreign cultures coming, and I don't know, humour was the way of, yeah, maybe it's off its time. But again, it's the context in which you say things, and you know, we can talk about these things. It's important to raise these issues, and if we can laugh about them, just. But these days, if you raise the issue itself, that's not allowed, you know.
Billy, let's go back and talk about the greats then. Doug Stanhope, Bill Hicks, obviously, Bill Burr, who's quite contemporary, I suppose you'd say, and Joe Rogan.
I'm not a fan of Joe Rogan.
The reason I wrote Joe Rogan is, first of all, I admire anyone that gets up there and tries to be funny. Very brave thing to do, right? I do think Joe's not very funny. And when he has these comedy greats on his podcast, like Bill Burr, like Doug Stanhope, I wonder if they're just like being a bit nice to him.
Right.
You know, because they really are like the funniest men on the planet. And like I say, good credit to Joe for giving it a go, but he seems like he has to try quite hard, if you know what I mean. And
yeah, I watched him in the early days and he was kind of all right, but he didn't grab me as somebody I was a fan of. And then he went on to his podcast and his, you know, wrestling thing. So I think he's just kind of got a name that keeps the comedy going, probably, or, you know, whatever. I'm not a big fan. I don't watch his podcast much. I think he's shilling. I don't know about shilling, but I don't know. For instance, the moon thing, he's retracted what he said about that, these kind of things, you know. So you wonder, then he got the $1 million contract or whatever for 100 million for Spotify. But
yeah.
You know, it's like people in GB News, you know, maybe they want to talk about more, but they can't because of who they're working for. I don't know. I don't watch enough Joe Rogan to really comment that much. My son shows me clips then again, and you get certain guests that are interesting. But I think he's a big pusher of this whole ayahuasca, you know, go and get fucked out your tits and culture and young people, and they're all taking DMT everywhere these days. These things should be done with a proper shaman and, you know, in the right condition and setting. And I think it's quite dangerous. People like even Terence McKenna was talked about as being, you know, the mushroom guy, but he's was called a CIA agent. And if you look at Gordon Wasson, where the whole psychedelic movement came from, he was a CIA agent, and that started in Time magazine promoting the mushrooms. These mushroom cults, maybe it's just to be used locally by these people. And there's a guy called Jan Irvin who talks about them. The mushroom cults in the past were like cannibals, or they've done crazy stuff, and now we're putting all this out there. I watched this other guy, this guy called Frank, who took a lot of DMT and stuff, and he's basically opened his mind up that much. This demon now lives inside him. So when you open up these, like I've took ayahuasca 13 times with a proper shaman, and you know at the end of it, he's got natural tobacco from the jungle and he's blown it on your head to close your crown chakra and stuff like this. You're messing with spiritual forces. So I think, you know, the way Joe Rogan makes dope boss so cool all the time, smoking dope all the time, I think a lot of young people are getting influenced and, you know, they're becoming apathetic. And, you know, doping a mobile phone is a young person's life these days. Where's the energy to go out there and change the world, you know? It's pacifying people, I think, that whole agenda, which is what the hippie one was involved in as well, you know?
Yeah. People think it's awakening and enlightening. And to a degree, experiences with substances, and I'm not condoning them, folks, I'm just saying, they can help you access new areas of life, let's say, or of your thinking and your sense of self, da-da-da-da. But ultimately, A, you got to keep that short-lived, because otherwise it just spirals into becoming habitual, which is addiction, especially. And you're going to get that anyway if you've got severe childhood trauma like I had. Yeah, I challenge you not to go down that pathway. You're going to think you found the key in the lock, and that's quite but you know, I me personally, I'm not complaining because I lived through it, but lots of my mates, you know,
I just think it's dangerous of you to promote it so freely, yeah, without any, you know, kind of warnings and that about it. There is a dark side to it, you know.
The thing is that obviously where he lived in it, what used to be California, it was legal. But what they don't say, Billy, is from a spiritual perspective, it cuts off your serpent power. It cuts off the kundalini. It's a toxin. It's a toxin that a plant creates to say, mammals, don't eat me, or I'm going to make you feel awful. But of course, we've learned to cultivate it. And so, you know, that's one thing. The other thing as well is the smoking is quite carcinogenic because it's carbon based and it hits the same spot in the throat. A lot of people run into difficulties with that when they've been a toker for a few years. Funny enough, and I'm not suggesting people do, but to eat it is very alkaline. Green plant, basically.
We should actually be taking hemp oil, you know, CBD and stuff, because we do have a cannabinoid system. And it's actually, if everyone was taking hemp oil, we don't have an immune system because there's no things flying through the air to form immunity from. But we have a health system, and that gets rid of poisons and stuff. But if you take the, you know, regular doses of that, it strengthens you up and it makes you more healthy. It's good for the human body.
Yeah.
It's so useful. Why is that plant illegal? It's just so shocking, you know?
Yeah, and hemp, that's not got the THC content, has it? So that really is kind of medicinal.
Well, there's different ones. You can get some with the THC, some without. There's lots of different companies these days. There's different grades. So you have to research the company you're getting it from. If you just isolate the CBD, I think it's not as powerful as if you've got the whole plant in there, because it's kind of worked together. But there's certainly a lot of people these days getting a lot of relief from bad joints and their bones and stuff like that, and back pain and various other ailments. That why isn't the, you know, your local doctor giving this stuff out? He's giving petrochemical based drugs that people are, they got acne, and but they're just rubbing that in their face, and it's toxic, more toxins in their body.
Mm.
But the hemp, they've got products like that, it's more natural, you know, and they are effective. And not to mention all the other things that hemp does, you know, paper and etc. And replenishing even the soil, you can get, make, it's good for the soil when you change over every year, you know. So, yeah, I mean, that was a big, it wasn't just a big stopping people getting high, the reason for making marijuana illegal, you know. It was part of the oil industry wanting to make more profits.
Oh, well,
that would free humanity up in a lot of ways if you used that plant more effectively.
Yeah, absolutely. And it does, it certainly has got a lot of uses. My thing to anyone out there, and this is just a, you know, my experience, because I was like off my head for 30 years, right, every day, you know, alcohol and whatever.
I think alcohol is much more dangerous. It's very prevalent in society.
Alcohol is the worst one. Absolutely. You know, I've watched two of people I consider like my best mates, like in my inner circle. I watch them both drink themselves to death, and it's fucking horrible. It's just, and to see people in that state, and they're just trying to get out of the hospital to go home, because all they want to do, and it's a tragedy. It's horrible. Yeah, when you're young, you're going to do a load of things, aren't you? And I wouldn't lecture anyone, but as you get older, if you're trying to make that spiritual connection, you're just going to kill it dead by putting toxins in your body. And essentially, even though that they have medicinal uses, they're still top. It's still a foreign. It's a plant that's saying, "Don't eat me," basically, or I'm going to make you really ill. And what that does is it cuts you off from the land of milk and honey. It just sort of chip that in there, friends, because Dr. Chris, no, I'm not a doctor.
But there is a lot of people these days on Reddit and stuff. There's whole groups of people all trying to get off dope, and it's like an addiction. And
it's one of the worst ones, mate. Getting off that is as worse. Well, not quite as bad as alcohol, because alcohol's so acceptable, you know, and it's so, so easy to do. But Jesus, I remember back in the old days, Billy, of when you went round someone's house and you got your makings out, and you rolled one and he rolled one, and then they rolled, and it was just how everybody lived in the 90s. and occasionally you get someone pop in and go, "Nah, I've packed it in," and you'd be like, "How? How did you manage? Are you like a saint or something? Like, none of us can stop it." It was.
I mean, whatever gets you through the night at the end of the day, you know, I think it's a lot less dangerous and harmful than drinking in the house every day. I've never been one to get cans of beer at the fridge and sit and doing that, you know. To me, drink is going out in a bar, having a few drinks, and then feeling shit the next day and say, right. I mean, back in my youth, didn't get me wrong, I was crazy, you know. And I just think that lifestyle is not good. If we're going to mature as a human race, we have to talk about what are we doing with our weekends, you know. Going out and just getting annihilated and just, the party lifestyle, all that's kind of set up for us. It's like, again, the makers weekend, we're out fucking, you know, worked all week, we're going to relax, we'll go and get annihilated. And is that fun? Is that improving ourselves? You know, I've just, because your audience is here and it's worth mentioning, there's a guy called William Katie who's been talking about the Constitution. He was on GB News yesterday. I think people... Because I think we need to stop the show, stop all the entertainment and everything until we sort the world out and realise, you know, this government has not got legitimate power over us. We, the people, have the power. And how are we going to stop that? You know, that's how I spend my time, trying to learn and improve, you know, and just try to wake people up to the urgency of the situation that we're in. And to me... If people want to pay a look at that guy's interview, it's worth looking at, because we need solutions, basically. You mentioned solutions earlier, you know. Like, I've been doing a show called Shooting the Shit. I've done 290 episodes since the, you know, big story started. And yeah, I've been ranting and generating anger, but it's theatrical. But at the same time, I'm talking about solutions and spirituality and all these different things just to try and generate interest in other people to go and look for these things themselves, because as you say, it's about taking the power back. But collectively, we need an answer. And if that constitution, if they've been acting wrongfully, which the guy explains how the jury system's supposed to work, because if the jury system is working correctly, we can kick out every n unjust law, because it's not just a person on trial, the law's on trial. So if you're getting put in jail for disobeying guidelines, then hold on, that law isn't right. And the person that writes the law, they're the one that gets in trouble. So our whole system needs to go back to how it was originally intended. And once they've done that whole system actually, then people need to raise their consciousness so they can be part of the jury. And the whole if the jury system was working right and the people were the sovereign power, we would have to change ourselves to match our new role almost. And this old way of partying and lifestyle and bullshit, we have to let it go and try and step up to, being sovereign beings and being responsible. Again, nobody wants to take responsible. The thing about the whole scam was at least top people, well, they learned that the body's a detox now, a cold or a flu. So what you put in yourself is quite important. And not just food, water, air, and also things you take in your mind and the rubbish you watch on TV, and et cetera. It's all, going into you and your subconscious takes it all
Yeah.
in, so be careful.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, just want to come back to these comedians, Billy, because I'm not going to get a chance to probably chat to a comedian about the greats and how they've affected you and how they've affected me. So, Doug Stanhope, he's just pretty out there, isn't he?
Well, I like Doug because he's just, yeah, he's my kind of comedian. That's the comedians I like. I want to try and be like them, and push the boundaries and just, that's why you go to a comedy show. It's not like television. It's not like sitting in your house. You're going there to hear somebody be raw and real, like the guy down the pub. That's what Billy Connolly done. He wanted to be like the guys there. So why should you go on a comedy stage? I don't try and really change myself. I'm just an exaggerated version of myself. And I like pushing the boundaries and saying shit you're not supposed to, but then getting a laugh out of it. It's the best thing, So, yeah, and some people in the audience will get it, but not everybody's going to get it. Doug Stanhope's got to a place now he can get his own audience there, and it's better. But he can't please everybody. And I know my shit is not for everyone, which makes it even more difficult when I go on stage because, especially like during the Edinburgh Festival, I'm getting crowds of people in that don't know me from Adam. So usually what would happen, especially when I was doing Rob Stewart, the first 10 minutes, about half the audience would leave, and then the rest that stayed, they were totally into it big time, So that was my hardcore posse. But yeah, Doug Stanhope's brilliant. He one time he does, let's have a go at the Jews. Why not? I've had to go at the Christians. I've had to go at the
The thing is with Doug, though, as much as yeah, I could listen to him forever, and he's a love clearly a lovely man. I love the fact that he lives in a shitty town in the desert where it's just cheap, and he just gets drunk all day long, and all the rest of it, I'd imagine. He's very pessimistic about life, though, and he's like, "Look, I'm drinking myself to death." And I kind of get that because it's what I did for 30 years.
He's kind of trapped. He's talked about somehow like he's not as funny. He was doing a special and he'd done a warm up and he wasn't drinking and it wasn't as good. And then, like, directly after the warm up, he'd had a couple of beers and people were saying, yeah, keep drinking, Doug, keep drinking, drink yourself to death because you're funnier,
Yeah. And Bill Hicks, obviously. Have you ever seen that Bill Hicks clip where he gets a heckler in the audience?
Yes, my mother. And you suck. You f get the f out of here right now. Get out. You idiot. You're everything that America should be flushed down the toilet, you fucking turd. You. Get out. Get out, you fucking drunk bitch. Take her out. Take her fucking out. Take her to somewhere that's good. Go see fucking Madonna, you fucking idiot piece of shit.
He was trying to make some real, like, valid social point that everyone needed to be aware of, and she just called him asleep.
Hi.
I mean, like, not awake, and it went over her head, so she started acting up, and then and then he lost his shit, man, and went,
Hi.
"Get the fucking out.
Aye. I want you to go and get a fucking soul.
Yes. Yeah, he was. He got it, though, didn't he? He got it. But again, somebody that understood it, to fight the spiritual battle, you can't be a chain smoker.
Well, he did stop for a while. And then apparently the story is when he got told he got cancer again, when he got told he had pancreatic cancer, he was in Australia, he just got a cigarette and started smoking until he died again. But that's the official story, you know. I don't know, what do you think of the rumours about Alex Jones and stuff like this?
Listen, I'd never laugh at anything. Let's just say there's certain theories out there, what you'd call conspiracy theories, that it's not, for me, I like to think I'd go on my all-seeing eye, you know, my third eye, pituitary, you know, pituitary and pineal gland. And that's how I sort of judge things these days. And I just get a feel for what's going on, which is why we had that in-depth bit about, I say, the name stealer, the pretenders. It's not what everyone thinks. When you get spiritual, you can see how the narrative has been warped and twisted in a way that your average Joe would have no idea. If you don't understand scripture, because it's allegory, so lion isn't an animal that your vicar in church is going to tell you, right? And they do, you know, the whole of the Church of England tell people that Samson fought a lion, blah, blah, blah. No, nonsense. What was it? Allegory. For to be a strong man, you have to get over your ego. Lion means ego. You have to kill the lion. Kill your ego. Kill your ego, then you become less judgmental. You don't have to prove yourself. You learn to love yourself for what you are instead of what you perceive people want you to be. And as such, you grow spiritually and you make a much stronger connection with what I call the all, the everything, right? So when you develop these skills, you see life in a very different way. And when you meet people that literally you cannot have a conversation with, because they are so into their narrative that it becomes their identity. I'm a this, I believe in, and you're like, yeah, but you know that can like easily be disproved so easily. Little bit of science, or just go and speak to the people that have actually done the thing that you said is impossible. It's like the JFK thing. A lot of people don't realize all the films you've ever seen about JFK, all the documentaries, they're all deep state CIA funded, all of them. The magic bullet narrative and it was because when JFK was shot, 80% of Americans didn't believe it was Lee Harvey Oswald, who's actually photographed outside the book depository as the cavalcade or whatever it's called went past. They don't know that the Zapruder film has had like so many frames removed from it. They don't get the umbrella man that lifts his umbrella as a signal to say the 12 snipers we've got have all fucking missed him. You know, go to the guy in the storm drain. That was the signal. Guy in the storm drain, so in the gutter in the street, who's crawled there, he's crawled half a mile through sewage. To Liner, who's actually a car salesman, waits for JFK. Boom! That's where his head back. Bill Hicks, wasn't it? Back
into the left.
And like, if you don't know all this stuff, you know, if you don't know, I mean, the fascinating thing about JFK, Billy, is that they switched I'm going to say allegedly, folks, for the sake of being polite to the family. But allegedly switched the cadaver. And when Lee Harvey Oswald was hiding in that cinema, which he, you know, he did because I can't remember if it's like immediately announced his name was the guy there was. Anyway, he was hiding in a cinema. And there was a police officer called I think it was J.D. Tippit. Okay. And everyone used to call J.D. Tippit JFK. And the reason was he bore this striking resemblance to the president.
Right.
And in that fracas where I believe it was Lee Harvey came out the cinema and the police tried to, this police officer was shot dead. Now, here's the thing. And again, I'm just going to say allegedly it was because they couldn't frame Lee Harvey Oswald for shooting from the book depository because the bullet clearly came from the front. It was someone in front of the car, right? They had to get a cadaver to swap with the president so that it had the bullet in the back. Right. And this poor copper who'd done nothing to no one except uphold the law, hopefully, he was the patsy for, you know, you're the victim, mate. You don't even know it. And they capped him. When you see that famous scene in Air Force One, the presidential aircraft, where they're swearing in the new president, that's all bullshit. When the president dies, automatically the vice president becomes president. There's no swearing in ceremony. It's not an inauguration. You automatic. But what it was is Jackie Kennedy wouldn't leave the coffin, right, which was in the back of Air Force One, and they had to swap them over.
Right.
So they said, Jackie, you know, you got to come up front now because we're going to swear in the new president, and you know, you really need to be there. And of course, this is a woman in shock, and you can see her. She's just stood next to the, you know, the next president, just face all that. And that was because they were swapping the caskets over. Right. And when the family went to visit the body, the first thing, Jackie Kennedy, now Jackie Onassis, isn't it? She said, that's not my husband. That's the first thing she said. That's not my husband. There's a great documentary. I think it's called Everything is a Rich Man's Trick. It talks all through this. They even paid a plastic surgeon to come to recreate this cadaver. So it not only looked like they like took his hairline back a bit, you know, and they played with a wound to make it, you know. So if you're not aware of all this stuff, whether you believe it or not, that's not the point. The point is, if you're not aware, how can you make your mind up on life, you know?
Well, that's what I realized that when I watched that video and then watched the news, and it says, well, I know very little of what's going on here, obviously. So that's what makes you want to research to find out.
Exactly. And on that note, Billy, I think we should end, because I would encourage all of our friends at home watching, research, get into life. It's been an incredible journey for me.
Yep, definitely. If you don't change, I think David Icke says, if you always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you've always got. So it's up to you to make the change.
Billy, you're a lovely, lovely man. Please take all my love to Scotland. Really look forward to seeing you soon. Stay on the line so I can thank you properly. What we're going to do, mate, put all your links below. Folks, get over and support this wonderful gentleman, because people that stand up for children, you know, they're the ones that need supporting. All these ones you see in Hollywood on the stage, they all know they're controlled opposite. There's certain things you just can't say. But yeah, folks, get on and support this man. So massive love to you all. Really look forward to chatting again soon. And if you can like and subscribe and hit the notification bell, if indeed you did like it, that'd be ace.
Friends, thank you for listening to the Bought the T-Shirt podcast. Please like, subscribe and share. And don't forget to follow me on social media. Username, Chris Thrall. Instagram, Chris.Thrall. Thank you.